This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Tuesday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Christy Landwehr from Aurora, Colorado. And you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Tuesday, March the 21st, episode 1656. This episode is brought to you by the Certified Horsemanship Association. Good morning, horse world.
Houston, we have a problem.
Ability equals skill plus knowledge.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Here's a safety tip for you from the Certified Horsemanship Association.
Missed it by that much.
How can I change this to make it better the next time?
Help you, I can. Yes.
Time for Training Tuesday on Horses in the Morning with the Certified Horsemanship Association.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us on this Tuesday morning. We're glad you're here. And of course, Christy is back. She's here the third Tuesday of every month with the Certified Horsemanship Association with our training day. Hey, Christy.
Hi, Glenn. How are you?
Good. And we got you all sounding good today, too. No phones for you today.
No, I'm all set up again. It's good stuff.
Which must mean you're at home for a change.
I am, but I landed last night at 9 o'clock. So it's a little early in Colorado for me, but anything for the radio show, anything.
And you were traveling once again because you're never home. I don't think the kids ever see you. And we'll talk about where you've been and what you've been up to and since the last time we talked to you.
Well, this time was the American Quarter Horse Association convention in San Antonio, Texas. And I'll tell you, I've never been to San Antonio.
Really?
I loved
haven't either,
it.
Actually.
Oh my gosh. They actually make the river green for St. Patrick's Day. They pour green dye into it.
And you were there for St. Patrick's Day, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do the cowboys celebrate St. Patrick's Day? Apparently
you know,
so.
There was a few cowboy hats out on the river walk that night that we were cruising around. Yes.
Did they have a big, did they have green beer at the AQHA convention?
You know, they didn't because they're kind of, you know, a little bit very traditional at the AQHA convention. If you want to be untraditional, you just walk outside your hotel and you walk down into the Riverwalk. And within 2 minutes, you have a variety of food and everything else. I recommend that city to everybody. Oh, I had so much fun. It was great.
Yeah, we want to go there sometime. We haven't been to most places in Texas, so we're going to do a Texas road trip one of these days.
It's a fun place, but I'll tell you, a Texas road trip will take you, you know, half a year.
Yeah,
if you
right,
really
exactly.
Want to see Texas, oh my gosh, so big.
That's true. We'll have to take a Texas flying trip.
Oh, there you go.
Well, Jennifer, what is coming up on today's training episode?
Coming up on today's CHA episode, it's all about making your horse business a real business. And we're going to be speaking with Shelley Blockberger and James Brickner, and they're going to talk about how best to set up your business, run your business, and a little bit about how to market your business. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Thank you, Jennifer. Appreciate that. Well, now, what are we talking about today? We got a lot going. Hey, I can actually contribute today. I saw the topic.
Yes, you can, in probably a really good variety. So you should probably, and you probably have done this numerous times, but share kind of your marketing and business story and kind of how it all came to be. I think that'd be really cool.
I have done it a number of times, but we can talk a little bit more about the marketing side. I think that would be fun. I think that would be good as we get into the topics here. But you wanted to talk first about your site accreditation manual. What is that?
Yes, I just wanted to mention it. We have recently updated it, and it kind of falls into this topic really well. It is everything for somebody who's wanting to set up their own equine business, or not even, let's say, a business. Let's say you want to build an arena in your backyard, or let's say you want to figure out how to do hitching posts better and how to concrete in the hitching post. If a horse pulls back, you don't have an issue, or things like that. It is programmatically laid out, managerially laid out, and facility laid out. And it's actually very easy to read. And you kind of look through it and kind of see what those things are. And then for anybody that does want to get site accredited, that it does have a business and wants to hopefully help with insurance discounts, all the answers are in that book before you take the test, which is kind of nice. So I just wanted to let people know it is there if anyone is interested in those types of things.
And where can they find it?
They can find it on chainstructors.com in our store.
Okay, cool. And before we get off, you know, I'm curious, before we get off the AQHA convention, so what are the hot buttons this year with the AQHA? And by the way, for people who are listening, I always get accused of this. So if you're listening overseas, it's the American Quarter Horse Association. We use acronyms and we really should say what they are.
Well, a few really fun things. First of all, 23 countries were represented. There was 997 of us. And the issues...
Which is really big for a convention.
It was good size.
Especially a breed convention.
Yeah, it was very good size. And they are, of course, the largest breed association right now in the world. And they have a lot of issues, though, similar to what a lot of others do. One of the big hot topics for them is microchipping and whether or not they're going to microchip all of their horses for performance reasons and breeding reasons and biosecurity reasons.
Why wouldn't you?
Well, that's just it. And I'll tell you, Dr. Tom Lenz, he was a keynoter at our conference last year. We didn't talk about microchip and we talked about other things. But that poor guy, he's been beating his head against the wall for 15 years trying to get microchipping done.
What's the objection? It's not expensive. I don't get the objection.
Well, he claims that it's because people are still worried about the black helicopters coming to get them.
I think they're really more worried about getting caught with shenanigans.
They just don't want to be spied on. You know, there's like this fear of big government spying on them.
Same problem with the hunter-jumper community is everybody, that's what people are saying at least, is that they don't understand how a chip works. They think it's a two-way communicating device and that you can literally like GPS track a horse as it gets, if it gets moves around, and they just don't understand what it is.
And it's just a 15-digit number. That's all it is.
And if you don't register it with anybody, it doesn't do you any good anyway.
It's a barcode that's stuck to your horse permanently. That's all it is.
That's all it is. And what's interesting is he was explaining that unlike in cattle, where it actually has an antenna in their ear and they put it in their ear tag.
Really?
And they can track the cattle anywhere up to like 100 miles. It's crazy good technology.
Wow.
A horse's one goes to sleep. So the only time you can even activate it once you put it in the neck is with a scanner. Otherwise, it just sits there and sleeps.
Well, yeah, because it wouldn't have the battery to run all the time.
Yeah, and it's just the size of a dime.
No, it's the size of a piece of rice.
Yeah,
little.
Yeah, Scooter's mic. We have to get the other one done. I just don't get it. I always thought that they didn't want to do it because it's kind of harder to pass off horses who aren't really the horses that they say in the papers.
Right, but you know, they're also saying like the hunter jumpers are requiring it this year. This is the first year that it's a requirement. So they're kind of the first ones to kind of launch this deal and then everyone else. But you know, there was so much talk after he brought it up in the kind of the general session that people talked about in the committees. It's probably just a matter of time before Quarter Horse does it.
Okay,
the Jockey Club requiring it now too soon?
For all their foals, yes.
Yeah.
For every new baby on the ground. You're right, Jen. They're also requiring it.
For the thoroughbreds? Yep. So now, let me ask you, so let's take the other side. What's the advantage? What will they do with it?
There's a lot of different reasons. One, the big thing that they talked about is natural disaster. And when you turn horses loose, let's say on national forest with a fire, or like what happened with Hurricane Katrina, boy, any horse that was microchipped found its owner. Any horse that wasn't microchipped didn't necessarily find its owner. So they said that was a huge way of helping. And then biosecurity reasons. Let's say you have some big disease outbreak that happens, like what's happened, you know, years ago at that one cutting show. Let's say you have something like that. Well, now it's a way to track horses coming on and off those fairgrounds because they scan them as they come into the fairgrounds and they scan them as they go out. So they know whether they're on the property or off the property. So lots of good things like that. Not to just mention tying a particular horse to particular registration papers is just kind of good practice. And quite frankly, we already do it with our cats and dogs all the time.
Yeah, well, and see, okay, that makes a lot more sense. And I was wondering if we're going to get to the point where they were actually being scanned in and out of the fairgrounds or out of the show.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is the plan.
And then you can verify whether it's the same horse.
as long as, like you've said, they've tracked that 15-digit number to a registration.
Right.
Paper.
Otherwise, right. You just get a 15-digit number and you don't know who it is. I mean,
correct.
It's just a number. It's like your Social Security number wasn't attached to a person. It's just
right.
a number. Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. Sorry, I didn't mean to get off on that.
I think that's great.
I know that one of the topics, and I know in the past AQHA has talked about this, and all the associations are talking about this endlessly now, is the aging out of the population and getting new people, youngsters involved. Do they have as big a problem with that as many of the other associations do?
Oh, yes. And I'll tell you, their executive vice president, who was on our show back in the past talking about associations, Craig Huffines, he did a great talk where he actually talked about their board, because they have a board of directors based on number of horses that are registered quarter horses in each state. So, of course, Texas has a lot of board members, and Rhode Island maybe only has one board member, but they all are represented based on that. Same thing with the countries and all the provinces in Canada. So with that, they have a big board, and their board is all aging out. They put a graph on the board, and I was considered young, and I'm in my 40s, and there was 16% of us. Everybody was in their 50s, 60s, 70s, and we even had a couple over the age of 75.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a concern, too. For
so sure. The leadership, you know, the leadership, it's fine and dandy to have your members younger, but if your leadership isn't younger too, then you're probably not going to keep those young members because you're not catering to them in any way.
Ding, 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 ding.
And we're just figuring that out now. But are they going to do anything about it? That comes down to the bottom
yes.
line.
They've been talking a lot about it, and they are definitely thinking about it. I sit on the marketing and membership committee, and we talked a lot about it, actually, in regards to especially the 19 to 34-year-old age group. Once they get out of youth and they go to college and they do all that and they start having their kids and things, they really drop off the map. There's a huge dip in those numbers for most associations.
Well, and that's true in life, though. I mean, kids just suck it out of you.
So... Then you need a break.
That's right. You pretty much everything else goes on hold for diapers and strollers. Right?
Yep. I mean, once the tired. Minivan comes into your life.
That's right. The pickup truck goes.
That's right.
But you long for that pickup truck and you just can't wait till maybe it will be back soon.
All right, we got to get on with our marketing chat. So what do you want to... Jennifer has prepared some sound files, and apparently you did an interesting talk.
I did. So I'll very briefly, because the talk goes for about an hour, so I'm going to give you the condensed couple minute version. So when you think about marketing, and this was such a good segue talking about the youth, we have different generations that we fall into. And I know some people listening are probably like, I hate labeling. And you know what? So do I. But from the standpoint of being able to understand and appreciate a certain group of people, generational stuff is actually pretty cool. So if you take it kind of in a more fun light, which is what I'm going to try to do now, I think that then you kind of go, huh, I kind of see where this is applicable. So let's start with the boomers. Now, you boomers out there, you guys are the ones that will never retire from your job, so the rest of us can never have your jobs. And that irritates us a little bit, but we still love you. But you're going to be the folks that are right now probably 54-ish and over.
It's me. It's Jennifer. That's what the boomers are. And nobody's ever taking this mic out of my hand.
Correct. Yes. And that's kind of cool, right? Because you're much more active. You don't think about retiring and sitting on the couch. You're like, I'm not going to retire. I'm going to like skydive when I'm 70. And it's great. So, but I just, from a media influence perspective, since of course we are a horse radio show, I thought we would kind of think about who were the media icons when the boomers were growing up, when TV was, you come home from school, you plop down in front of the TV and you watch an hour or two, or you go to the movies or things like that. So I would love, Jennifer, to play this first clip because you guys are thinking about it to see if we got the nail on the head here.
And by the way, you were sitting in front of the TV because that's the only way you could turn the channel and the volume up and down. So
right in front of it.
Right.
No remote.
No remote. Here we go.
The Lone Ranger. A fiery horse with the speed of light, a cloud of dust, and a hearty Hi-Yo Silver. The Lone Ranger.
Hi-Yo Silver! Away!
with his faithful Indian companion Tonto, the daring and resourceful masked rider of the plains.
Hello, I'm Mr. Red. A horse is a horse, of course, of course. And no one can talk to a horse, of course. That is, of course, unless the horse is the famous Mr. Red.
Well, riders, Trigger here is raring to go, so let's get started with today's story.
The Roy Rogers Show, starring Roy Rogers, King of the Cowboys, Trigger, his golden palomino, and Dale Evans, Queen of the West.
Happy trails to you, till we meet again.
I think Roy Rogers was even before our time, though. I remember Mr. Ed. Don't remember Roy Rogers.
But that was great. I loved all that, Jed. Thanks. So good. So, you know, and then there's a lot of people. It's so funny. You'll like talk to the people like in their 20s now, and they're like, we don't know any of those. And, you know, you can find them still on Netflix. You can find them still on different things. But, you know, that's just kind of fun. So that's kind of lot what we grew up with. The boomers did. And they had a lot of horses in their lives, right? And they wanted to be cowgirls. They wanted to be cowboys. And it was just kind of what
unique,
it was.
Something unique, though, that I think happened in the late 40s and early 50s. Previous to that, the equine icons were real equine icons. They were the Man O' Wars and the Seabiscuits. They were famous rock stars. And then we shifted to the Hollywood version, which is the fantasized version of an equine icon. That changed a little bit. And I think for Glenn and I, at least, people born in the mid to late 60s and early 70s, there were no equine icons. There just weren't any at all.
That's a good point.
You're right about that.
Yeah, that's a good point. There really weren't at that point. Secretariat came in there in the
yeah, a little
70s.
Bit. Yeah, Secretariat,
yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. We're hijacking your chat.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I think that's fine. No, this is the kind of stuff that I just find really fascinating, you know, to kind of find out people and things that maybe we like and don't like and how we market to them based on things that they know. So the next generation, of course, is the Xers, and that's what I fall into. The Yers like to sometimes stick themselves with us. They don't necessarily like to stick themselves with the millennials, which is interesting. So let's just say the X and Yers, that's going to be kind of your 30s and 40s-ish. Obviously, there's a little bit of, you know, controversy over the exact dates. But we now, it transitioned into some very different things. Unlike some of the boomers that truly did have either a parent at home, normally mom, or they had, you know, just kind of a situation where they did have, kind of have their parents around. Us, we were the latchkey kids. If they actually coined the phrase for us, we would have a little key around our neck or somewhere where we wouldn't lose it. We'd come home, we'd let ourselves in, and we plop ourselves down in front of the TV. And so those iconic Mr. Eds and those kinds of things, they weren't there anymore. There really wasn't a whole lot of horse programming on TV kind of at that stage in time. You might have had just barely My Little Pony stuff was coming out on the end of maybe the Y generation, but you really didn't have a whole lot. So in the movies, though, we did have an icon, and we're going to play that clip in just a second. And then if you go down to the millennials are in their 20s and kind of early 30s. And the millennials right now, of course, are entering the job market like crazy. And these guys, very different, not necessarily latchkey kids. These now have parents that are like, no, I don't want them to be latchkey kids because I was a latchkey kid. Or they're just like, no, we're not going to kind of go that route. So they have a tendency to be the little bit more of the everybody gets a blue. Let's do the team effort and those kinds of things. Whereas the Xers are more the independents. And I'll be honest with you, the boomers like to be independent too. But this new millennial generation, they love to work in teams.
Now the boomers just like to be ornery.
Well, yeah. I would, and look, you take pride in that.
I do.
See how you just mentioned that with pride? Absolutely. So the millennials, you know, their things kind of changed a little bit. And we'll go ahead and play the clip for both the Xers, and then we'll play the clip for the millennials, and we'll talk a little more.
The Black Stallion, an unforgettable adventure, a motion picture of extraordinary beauty, a story that will make your heart race, your spirit soar. But most of all, it will make you believe in the Black Stallion.
Look at that beautiful.
DreamWorks Pictures presents a world that's never been seen and a spirit that can never be broken.
They own my heart. The only light that shines there in the dark.
You will always be in my heart, spirit who could not be broken.
We should have added My Little Pony on the end there.
Just for fun. Well, I don't know about anyone else listening who's in my generation, but I wanted to be Alec. I thought he was so cool getting to ride the black on the beach and then go ride the black on the racetrack and go fast and have a best friend who's a horse. Cool. So that's kind of an interesting change from the horses being more of a comedic relief, like with Mr. Ed, and then kind of, part of the process of cowboy and Indians kind of thing, like we had with Roy Rogers and stuff. And then you move into the millennials and Spirits Dying of the Cimarron. Now they're animated and they're 100% anamorphotized, right? They even have eyebrows so that on a cartoon, we could make them have all those expressions. And of course, horses don't have eyebrows. And then one more thing about Disney, if I can just say this, and if we're trying to get them eventually as a sponsor, and I know we love Robin down in Florida, but here's the deal, Disney, the stallion is not in charge of the herd. The mare is. Okay, I just have to say that.
Had to get that out.
I feel so much better now.
It doesn't make a good story, though, for Disney.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I think Jen and I could come up with lots of good things if the mayor was in charge.
That's right. Yeah, but they haven't hired you as a writer yet.
I know. Yeah. Oh. Different career path.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right.
So it kind of changes a little bit, you know, because now you've got the millennials and even the Generation Zs, which are my children who are 10 and 12, and they're starting to have more animals kind of in cartoons. So now animals are equal to humans. We're 100% partners. They're kind of going down the road now of wanting to make them pets more than livestock. I mean, there's just all these kind of things that brings up, well, quite frankly, things that might be an issue in the future of the horse world if we don't kind of watch them. So it's kind of a fascinating process. And I'll tell you, we're so influenced by our media, whether it's social media, whether it's TV, whether it's podcasting and radio, right? We're really influenced by it. I mean, we love sound and lights and action, and we love it to the point where sometimes it can truly define who we are.
You know, it's interesting, too, because I've had people who've been younger who, for the first time, get to a place, Indiana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, where there's Amish. And I grew up in Amish country, Lancaster County. So, you know, we grew up with the Amish and Mennonites. And, you know, half my school was Mennonite. And you'd see out and go out in the fields and you'd watch the eight Percherons pulling the plows and stuff. And kids see that today and they think it's torture. And yet, that's what everybody did. I mean, it's the way it was before, but they have no reference point to before tractors and before cars, right? So nobody has that reference point until you watch. I love looking at those old videos, and there's very few of them left, of the cities back then, the actual black and white videos, and you see 1,000 horses just weaving in and out, and there's like no rules, but you see all of these horses in the streets. And there's just no reference point to that anymore. So you're right when they think they're pets instead of work animals now.
Well, and Glenn, I love that you bring that up, because all that requires is those of us that have a business, we have to market better and educate better. And it really is education, because if you explain to a group of people that the driving horses actually love their job, they want to drive, they want to work, they don't want to really just sit in their stall all day. I mean, quite frankly, horses are intrinsically lazy, but if you get them out and get them going, they like the interaction with the people. And then you explain, this whip that I'm carrying, let's say when you lunge a horse, people go, you're going to beat it when you lunge it in a circle? No, it's just an extension of my arm. It's never going to touch the horse. And then you've got the side reins on a horse. People say, oh my gosh, you're tying their head down. No, when a horse's head is up, the endorphins are telling it to flee. That's why they're looking and they're alert. When their head is down, they're relaxed. They're eating. They're doing whatever. When we actually put side reins on a horse, it chills them out and it makes them go, ah, and then they use their back better and they don't get a sway back over time. They use their abdominal muscles better. You know, so it's all just kind of education. And I think that that's really key.
Yeah, I do too. And I totally agree with you there. It's part of what we're trying to do here at the Horse Radio Network, right? Is for
That's
people
why we're
who,
here.
Yep, people who don't have horses can get a horsey fix and maybe learn a little bit along the way too. As it relates to social media, boy, that even we used to do a conference when we first started. It was back 9 years ago now. And Facebook wasn't even around yet, but we did a new media meetup, we called it. And new media back then was not what it is even today. Twitter had just started. Facebook had just started. It was just coming out of the college scene at that point. And, we talked about email marketing and how you reach things. It's amazing what's happened over the last 10 years and how that has totally changed to now. There's 20, you can't keep up with the social networks that are popular with kids, especially if we're talking about generational marketing.
Without a doubt. And I'll tell you, we just recently interviewed through a SurveyMonkey our members. We did a survey and we asked them where they're advertising now. And, it's word of mouth still is the number one thing for people to share their equine barns and their breeding programs and their boarding programs and lesson programs. However, number two was Facebook posts. They're putting their events on Facebook and boosting them. They're putting their information on Facebook and boosting it. That wouldn't have been 10 years ago.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't have been, for sure. And we did those conferences every year. It was for the Equine World, and we had about 1,500 people there. And we did it, I think, for 3 years, and then it fell by the wayside. But every year, it was totally different. And if we were still doing it to this day, it would be totally different every year.
Oh, without a doubt. And that's kind of fun, but also very daunting and scary for those of us that have to keep up with it. Which is basically all of us. If you have a business, so no matter what your business is, whether it's in the horse industry or something else, we have to keep up with the marketing side and the social media side. And oh boy, it's a lot.
And we don't do a very good job, to be honest, here at the Horse Radio Network. We use Facebook very well, and we use that as our kind of our main form of communication. We have 20,000 followers on Twitter, but pretty much all we post over there is tied into Facebook. So all our Facebook posts go over there. We do get interaction on Twitter, but I think Twitter's even changed over time. It's become more of the celebrity place to be, so people go to Twitter to follow celebrities.
Yes.
And also, I got to be honest, world events. If there's something that's happening, if there's an earthquake or there's a natural disaster or whatever, I always go to Twitter first now because you're getting it much sooner than you are even in the news, which totally is different than it was before.
Without a doubt. And I think you're right. I think now the social media is some of it's been out there long enough that it's defining itself in a niche market. Just like you said, Twitter is more for the celebrity following. I think you're right about that.
And news and immediate news.
Yep. Absolutely.
I'm in the middle of this earthquake. I can tweet. So, I think that's what's happening there. It is harder to keep track, like Instagram and everything else that's out there. We don't do very well. I don't know how the CHA approaches that, but that's something that we could do better on. And then it comes down to, do you have the time for a company or for a business? If you have your own farm, if you have your own training business, it comes down to you can't do everything without help. And then it comes back to, can you afford the help? So you always have to make a decision about what is the priority. We have chosen our priority pretty much to be Facebook and Twitter and email and things like that. You just can't do it all if you're a small company.
I would agree. And I'll tell you, that's why I'm so excited about having our guest on, because she is going to explain some marketing things and we're going to get a little bit in the weeds on it, which I think we should, about some details of how to make your life easier so that you can actually do all of these social media things simultaneously and some other things. So I would love to introduce Shelley Blockberger.
Well, let me get her on first here.
Sure.
Yeah, I have to call her. Our system is a little messed up today, so we're going to plan B.
I love it.
All right. Yeah, I'm getting her on here.
Great.
So you can continue. Sorry.
Sure. No, Shelley, she's owned and operated her horseback riding lesson and boarding business, B&B Farms, in Russellville, Missouri, since the year 2000. Just like we were talking about education, Shelley is a huge believer in education. She's not only certified with us, she's also an AQHA professional horseman and an American Paint Horse Association professional as well. She offers a lot of seminars and things at her barn, where she teaches a variety of folks, including 4-H and FFA. She also scribes for APHA horse shows and judges local open shows. So many different facets of Shelley. So that's why we brought her on today to talk about business and marketing. Hi, Shelley. How are you?
Oh, good morning. I'm doing great. I hope everybody out there is doing great too. So
good to have you on the show today. Will you tell us a little bit about where you live in Missouri? I've never been to that neck of the woods.
We are almost right in the center, just a little bit south of Jefferson City. I live in near a small town called Russellville, which is kind of in between Jefferson City and Lake of the Ozarks. A lot of people know Lake of the Ozarks. So.
And how are you guys weather-wise? I know everyone's been having such a wild winter. What's going on in Missouri for you?
Oh, 80 yesterday, today 50. So quite a lot of diversity in temperature right now this spring. So, and dry as can be. So,
you know, Missouri's one of those states you don't hear much about. You know, nationally,
no.
And I guess that's good. That means there's not anything really bad happening there. It's just, you know, you're kind of under the radar, Missouri.
Right. Not right now. You know, we at times we have our share of floods and our share of tornadoes. But other than that, it's pretty quiet right now. So
that's good. That's a good thing.
I like to be under the radar.
Exactly.
It's way better than being above the radar.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So, Shelley, what are some of the different equine facilities where you have worked and ridden and volunteered throughout your career?
A lot of Western barns. I've ridden and helped out, you know, with some local folks here in Missouri. And then just got to hang around some bigger names, too. One of the highlights is hanging out at Sean Florida's for 3 days and really learning a lot about reining horses. We had the gentleman since retired, his name's Randy Short, and he was big in the paint horse industry. And I was fortunate enough to kind of work for him at a barn that he was boarding at. And so learned a lot from him, while working at that particular barn.
Help. You know, the more things you see and the more experiences you have, I tell everyone just getting out of college, take every single internship you can, whether it's paid or unpaid to start, to just truly learn
exactly.
about your industry, whether it's horses or
yes.
whatever it is, right? Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, totally. Totally. Anybody you can absorb that knowledge from, and even if you're just hanging out at the barn, it's a great way to learn.
So before we launch into kind of the details of business and marketing, what do you think from an overall perspective? Do you think that your current clients and customers think that what you do for a living is actually work?
No, I'm sure they view it as fun and, oh gosh, I wish I had your job.
I could play with horses all day.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
And there's a whole lot more to it, especially when you run your own business, you know, and you're pretty much the sole proprietor of it. I've got family that sure helps me out and backs me up, but you know, it can be tough at times.
Yeah. It's not something that's for the faint of heart for sure. If you're going to go down the road of self-employment, what are some of the big things though, Shelley, as somebody who's self-employed that you think are really important for everyone to hear about?
Really getting your ducks in a row and how you're going to operate your business, whether you're going into just strictly training or whether you go into a lesson business. And really, no matter what facet you go into, you're going to have to deal with the public. A lot of people say, well, you know, I want to get into horses because all I've got to do is deal with the horse. Well, that's not quite true. You need those people skills as well. So,
without a doubt, I think you're right about that. I think especially those people that are doing more of the training side, right? They tend to be a little bit more introverted sometimes and a little bit more, I really just want to be with the horse. I don't want to deal with people. Well, somebody owns those training horses and you probably might need boarders to supplement your training business and on and on and on. So you make a very valid point.
Right, right. I just had, I've got a horse in training right now, and my trainer said the other day that, you know, you just can't almost singly make it on one thing these days. You've got to, you know, if you're doing lessons, you've got to have that boarding to back you up. If you're training, you need the boarding or you need some lessons to kind of go along with that. And, you know, especially to make a living out of it. So
do you think, and I know every time we bring this up, right, the people in the horse industry go, I hate the paperwork, but is there some key things in regards to the paperwork, like having a business plan, for example, that you think are important?
Oh, correct. A business plan, number one. And there, you know, there are a lot of, I guess, facets to that business plan. There's kind of a short list of things to include in that business plan. And I don't know if you want me to give them here. I've kind of got my own, you know, what I had made up.
I would love the details, Shelley, please.
For years. Start out with a mission statement, you know. And my mission statement is experience and knowledge combined to create safe horsemanship. Don't believe I copied that off of anybody, but I, you know, got it somewhere. And, you know, a paragraph explaining that. Then define what your product or service is.
Let's stop at the mission statement once.
Oh, okay.
Because I think I kind of thought mission statements were silly, actually, to be honest with you, until I started the Horse Radio Network. And then I really thought, well, for the first time in my life, with all the businesses we've had, I'm going to actually do a mission statement. And the importance of that mission statement that I did back then, which was one sentence, today has come to fruition, and now I realize how important a mission statement was, because it truly has driven that one sentence, which ours is, uniting the horse world one show at a time. And, you know, that has come true today, but it really has been the model that we have used, and it was one sentence. And so for me, I've really changed what I've thought about mission statements over the years because of this really defining who we are today as a company and a much bigger company than we were back then. But it truly has been that one sentence has guided us the whole way.
Right. Exactly. It defines who you are and what you do.
But that's hard to do. That's hard when you're first starting out, because you kind of have an idea of what you want to do. But, you know, as far as a mission, I think a mission takes it to a whole new level. Am I the only one that is making that up?
No, I think you're right. I think you're right. And you've got a mission statement, a purpose, a bunch of things.
And it can kind of change through the years as you go along. You know, I don't believe that it has to stay exactly the same, you know.
And you know what you can do too? You can make it so short, it can become almost like a why statement. Like Simon Sinek, I just want to give him a plug. He has this amazing book that we kind of guided ourselves through as a nonprofit board. And he talks about even taking it to a smaller level and do things like Nike would Just Do It. Now, Just Do It, we know, is Nike because they do a lot of advertising. But Just Do It could be a variety of things. It could be Just Do It, go barrel race. Just Do It, go trail ride, right? I mean, you think about that. So it's kind of your why statement plus how you market it and put it to use and put it everywhere and get it into people's minds. And it sounds like, Shelley, like you're doing a great job with that, because you are, you know, even your mission statement, I mean, sure, you have the safe horsemanship part in there, but the experience and knowledge could be for underwater basket weaving, right?
Yeah.
I mean, technically, right? So there's
right.
only it's, so many words in the human language, but when we combine them and then we make them our own and we live by it every day, then it truly does become our mission statement. So I'm so glad that you mentioned them. And Glenn, I'm glad that you now appreciate them, because I think that that is something that's really overlooked.
And I think part of the reason that people, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I think it's part of the reason when people are starting a business that it gets overlooked is because it's scary and it's hard to define what you want to do in your business at the beginning. You kind of have an idea, especially the horse world. How many horse people that are in business, training businesses, professional riders or whatever, have ever done a business plan? I would venture to say the only ones who wanted to borrow money are the ones who've done business plans. So am I wrong about that? But, you know,
very few.
Yeah. And it's because, and I think this, one is it takes time and it takes thought. And it's scary, because then you've got to kind of live up to those things you've put down.
Right. And it's part of the paperwork. And if you're kind of against that paperwork part right at the beginning, well, you know, maybe you need to go to work for somebody and not, you know, be the one in charge of your own business. Because, like I say, the paperwork goes along with it as much as mucking the stalls. So
it unfortunately does. I mean, we can get nitty gritty paperwork like incident forms and, you know, obviously having a release form before people get on, or mm-hmm. even a boarding contract, blah, blah, blah. But really, I think that you're guided. And quite frankly, I think the business plan and the marketing plan are much more fun than the paperwork like the incident reports and the boarding contracts, which most of us have to have. So, Shelley, go ahead and continue. What are some other things on your business plan list?
Defining your product or service, listing your business assets, knowing what the industry is. The horse industry compromises, at least in your area, depending on how far-reaching your business is going to be. Defining your management team. Your target market, who your competition may be in your area, an operating plan, marketing strategy, just as you noted there, and your financial projections, where your funding is going to come from, and your growth projections. It sounds all very business-like, but, these sound like big headings, like something you're just really going to have to delve into. And really, it doesn't have to be that complicated. Like you say, if you're going for that loan, then you may have to expound on it a little bit. But
like, we can just jump in and do one really quickly so people aren't as afraid. An asset. So mm-hmm. do you want us to just talk about really briefly what an asset might be?
My business assets. I define my barn as an asset. Especially doing a little boarding on the side.
Although, you know, most of the time it seems like a liability, I have to be honest.
The boarding or the barn?
The barn. Because you're always fixing the darn thing. It's
like, oh, yeah, yeah. There's always a repair or an update to do.
Just like, you know, having another house.
Exactly. It needs cleaning too every now and then, huh? If you have trails surrounding your property, or if you have access to trails, that's a business asset, especially when you define, you know, what your product or service is. How many arenas you have? Do you have a round pen for people to train in? Do you have an outdoor arena, indoor arena? Your location? Those are just a few things right there.
Yeah, absolutely. So we can kind of get into the nitty gritty without people going, oh, I can just list those. It's not like you have to be eloquent and write a fabulous paragraph or two or three or a chapter, right? So I think that that's great.
Yes.
So you mentioned there at the end, Shelley, about marketing. Let's just dive into that just for a little bit. What are some different things in regards to marketing that you've personally done with your own business?
You know, once you get started, word of mouth, maybe overlooked and it's free, but once you kind of build your reputation, word of mouth almost brings you in more business than anything. And, I'm kind of small potatoes here in Missouri, but I feel like I've done pretty well for myself where I'm located at. So I don't do a lot of paid advertising. I do a lot of social media, but it's mainly through Facebook. I do write for a sports magazine at the present time, so I get a little free publicity there in print. But there are so many things that you can do that don't have to cost you a large amount of money.
And so when you were looking at different programs to have, what would you advise our listeners in regards to programs and different things that they can do to attract people to come?
Let's see. I've done a Mother's Morning Out, where, older ladies or mothers of some of my students could come and ride in the morning when all the kids are gone to school, offer some pastries and juice, let them socialize. That worked out for me pretty good 1 year. My biggest draw is youth. So anything that you can do for youth, I think camp is the number one draw for youth. You know, you have a handful of kids that go for regular lessons, but then the biggest thing are camps. I did a spring break camp, a one-day thing, and I had 23 kids.
Wow.
For just that one. And I've got several schools around me, but really I'm in a small area. So, but those are just a couple things.
Yeah, those are great ideas. You know, and I know that there was another barn near us that did a literacy program where they actually would bring people in, and the kids would want to read to the horses, or they'd bring a little pony to the school, and then, you know, they would read a book to the pony. And sometimes that got kids that were not even reading at all to get out of their shell because they felt comfortable, kind of like reading to your dog or cat. But right. I think the horse is just so big and so majestic, and there's just something about it that it just brings out the best. So programs where people can interact and maybe not even have to ride, I think, is something for folks to think about. So that's great.
Right. And we've participated in the Time to Ride program. And, you know, we've had a couple of open houses with that program, but also I've got miniatures here, and I've taken those miniatures to school programs, FFA programs. I've taken them to daycares, you know, over the years. So.
Well, Shelley, I'm glad you mentioned Time to Ride. For those that are listening, you can Google Time to Ride, or you can go on American Horse Council's website. We had Patty Colbert on it, who was one of the original founders of the program might have been a year ago now. But the program, you can win money, and based on if you're a small, medium, or large program, based on your number of clients, and you can compete for prizes and things. So it is a fun program to get hopefully more people to your barn and to find out about you. So check them out since we're talking about marketing.
Right. And they help you with that. They give you the resources and tools to, you know, promote yourself as well as, you know, the program. So it's a win-win.
Now, you know, I used to have my own riding program, and I still teach a little bit. But now, of course, I run an association. And I want to just ask you, Shelley, if this happens to you, because, boy, does it happen to us. We have those programs that we just won't sunset, which is basically a nice way of saying get rid of them. They're not bringing in enough. We're advertising them for no reason. Do you ever have issues like that at your barn?
Oh, yes. I've come up with things I thought would, you know, really go over and try to promote them. You know, there are a lot of trail riding programs out there, for instance. So I kind of started my own where, you know, my clients could pay a little bit extra fee, log their hours, and I would personally, you know, give them prizes for the hours they logged. And it didn't go over. Nobody really bought into it. So it's like, man, that's got to go out the door. I don't need the extra paperwork. I don't need to keep pushing it when nobody's, you know, you can always revisit those things another year or later, you know.
I get, and I'll give everybody a piece of advice. I don't care what business you're in. I've said it before. I'll say it again. The biggest thing I learned in the investment business when I was there is I had a mentor who said, fire your worst client every year. Fire your worst client every year. And we still kind of stick to that today, because if you get rid of that person, one, you'll discover that you have 20% more time, and you'll usually find that that person was very low in income for you anyway. It was one of your low income producers, and the most time was expended on that one person. And if you fire them every year, you get 20% of your time back.
Wow, Glenn, I'm really like Ryan. You like me as a host. I'm getting a little bit afraid.
You're next year, Christy. I was going to wait.
We're going to sunset that. Got it.
But it's true. I mean, it's true. And, you know, people that have used that over the years, I don't care what business you're in, it applies. It really does. And especially if you're in the boarding and training business, because you always have that one customer that's a pain in the butt. They usually account to the lowest amount of revenue, yet you're spending the most amount of time on them. And once they're gone, your whole barn attitude gets better. I mean, the atmosphere is better. They just tend to also be the negative person in the barn. It just all is that one person. We ran a boarding business for a lot of years.
And for all the boomers listening, remember that show, right? It's like, as the arena turns, they just start going, right? And you're like, oh my gosh, just stop the madness.
All right, we have to wrap.
All right. Well, Shelly, how can people find you and learn more about you?
I am at www.bandbfarmllc.weebly.com is my website. I'm on Facebook at BNB Farm LLC, and people can text me at 573-690-7014.
Very good. Thank you for that.
You can also find her on the CHA website. I'd be remiss in not bringing that up.
Good.
You can find her there, too.
Yes.
Many places to find Shelly. So, Shelly, thanks so much for being on today. I really appreciated all the insight, and I'm sure our listeners did as well.
It was great. Thank you so much.
Shelly, you're fired. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
you're sunsetting me. Oh, my God.
I am. Yeah. Thanks, Shelly.
Bye-bye.
All right, let's take a break for our song. And I thought, well, what would be appropriate today? And I thought a little Templeton Thompson with Lesson in There Somewhere would be appropriate for today's conversation. We'll be right back here in a few minutes.
Well, I cowboyed up and climbed on back about a while ago. Palomino. I was fearless, I was foolish, I was gonna be the one to settle him down. Yeah, yeah. They said, hold on tight, he's a real life El Diablo. I was sure of myself right up until I hit. Like learning today, maybe tomorrow. Well, this ain't the first time I've ignored that little voice telling me don't go there. But listening has never been one of my strongest suits. No. Jump right in, sink or swim, and it's gotten me nowhere. Still in me, I still believe my broken heart is like learning today. Maybe tomorrow. Oh, yeah. Not today, but right now. Oh, it's just too hard for crying out loud. Doesn't kill you, only makes you stronger, they say. But like learning today. Oh, maybe
That's Templeton Thompson. You can find all of her music at templetonthompson.com. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. We are here on the CHA Day, the Certified Horsemanship Association, with Christy. I wanted to remind everybody before we get to our next guest that we are going to Road to the Horse this week on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We're going to have coverage here on Horses in the Morning live from Road to the Horse. My co-host this year is Tara Carter. She is a ranch horse competitor and trainer out of Texas. Her husband competed at Road to the Horse before, and she was down there helping in the round pen. So she is co-hosting with me this year. We're looking forward to that. I'm heading out this afternoon to Lexington, Kentucky, to the Kentucky Horse Park. It's always fun to go there. And it is a neat event. We'll be an hour and a half Friday and Saturday mornings, just like we do here. And we'll be talking to you all about the event, giving you updates. This year's a little different, Christy. It's all female competitors this year. Four cowgirls are competing. It's the first time they've ever done that. So we're excited to see how the cowgirls step up. Now, there have been girls that have competed before, like Stacy Westfall won years ago, and she'll be there as the announcer on the ring floor this year. So it should be interesting to see how the girls make out training the colts over a three-day period of time. If you're not familiar with the Road to the Horse, it is the world's premier colt starting competition. It's kind of like the Super Bowl of colt starting. And you get to watch it all unfold over 3 days, which I thought my first year, Christy, would be as boring as all get out. But it really is not. It really is kind of fun to watch.
I'll tell you, I've never been, but it's on the bucket list.
Oh, you have to come. We'll bring you in next year. You can come and join us.
I would love it.
Yeah. So, yeah, definitely something to see. And we have a lot of listeners going. So we're looking forward to seeing you all there. And maybe I'll put a couple of them to work. We'll make them come on the show. So our next guest, while I get him on here.
Well, I'm so excited to introduce James Richter. He just recently joined our board of directors, so he's a CHA certified instructor in both arena riding and also out on the trail. He is originally from Oklahoma, but Humboldt, Kansas is where he was raised, and he got his university degree at Ottawa in business administration. And he also got his MBA. So talk about somebody perfect for this topic that we're talking about today. He is a true believer of education. He's part of the American Camp Association. And he's also, of course, part of us. And he's even a Red Cross lifeguard. And currently what he does is he works as the camp director at Camp Chippewa there in Kansas. So hi, James. Great to have you on the show.
How are you guys? I'm glad to be here.
He's so much too educated to be allowed to come on our show, actually. I'm just, he's too smart. We don't allow that much education on our show.
I just never was able to actually get out of school. That was a problem.
Your parents loved that, I bet.
Yeah. Well, the federal government still loves it, I can tell you that much. They're getting payments quite regularly.
Good old student loans. I'm telling you, they last forever. So
they do.
Tell us a little bit about where you live. Where exactly in Kansas are you?
Yeah, so we're in Ottawa, Kansas, which is just south of Kansas City, about an hour away from Kansas City Airport. It's a smaller town, but still we have a Walmart, you know, so it's not super small. I live out at Camp Chippewa. It's a summer youth camp. We're about 8 miles west of Ottawa, out in the Chippewa Hills, which is a really neat little, we kind of like to think it's a little bit of a slice of the Ozarks out here in Kansas, where most people view Kansas as flat rolling plains, you know. So yeah, it's a beautiful little area.
James, my life revolves around food. So when I think Kansas City, of course, I think barbecue. Do you have any good barbecue down where you are?
We do have some good barbecue. We've got Guy and Mae's Taverns in a little bitty town. It doesn't even have a stoplight. They are known for some of the best slab ribs in the area. I think they were quoted as one of the 8 wonders of Kansas as far as food goes. Everything served on newspapers and styrofoam plates. Oh, and
those are the best barbecue places.
It's a great little experience.
Oh, we have to go visit. We'll have to visit him sometime, Christy. I'm hungry now.
I could drive there. Yeah. I'm really close.
Yeah, you could, actually. Yeah. You're not too far.
We'd love to have you.
So, James, what are all the different equine facilities where you have worked, ridden, or volunteered kind of during your career?
Yeah, so my career, I started out, I grew up camping out here at Camp Chippewa, so I've been involved in this program ever since I was a young one. And then through college, I worked out here at this camp as well. I also volunteered. There's a therapeutic riding ranch that is 20 minutes away from us called New Horizon Ranch. I've spent a lot of time volunteering out there and working with them closely. Really passionate about that program and what they do. There's a number of other camps kind of in our general vicinity. Prairie Star Ranch is a camp just down the road from us. They have a horse riding program that I've worked with them a bit and done some mentoring to some of the different people that have been in their program, along with Rock Springs 4-H Camp. It's out in Junction City, right by Manhattan, Kansas. They've got a horse program. I've spent some time with them. And there's Tall Oaks is up north, so I've spent some time with them. Kind of just been a lot in the camping world. I grew up doing a lot of day work on ranches down in southeastern Kansas and M&M Ranch. I spent a lot of time, just doing day work out there and whenever they had big groups to work. I've kind of got a wide diversity of all my background, except for when I did my CHA instructor courses in Western riding. I haven't spent a whole lot of time atop a English saddle. It's been a great experience. I love to learn about new programs, what they're doing, how things can be better. And always remembering what you were doing, that way you can go back to it if you had to. So,
well, I love all that experience because I'll tell you, all that kind of makes you know what things worked and what things maybe could use some improvement along the way. So for our listeners today, James, if someone is just starting out with a horse business, what are some things that you think they should look for, let's say in the facility, or if they're going down the road of building it from scratch, what are some tips you have?
Some tips I would have is if you're going to build something from scratch, give it some time, especially if you're just starting out, either give it some time or make sure that you locate some key people that have been involved in operating those facilities and see how they work and what are some things that you can do to make the program run as smoothly as possible, because facilities are so important when it comes to the flow of how that those programs are run. One of the things we've done out here recently is the majority of the fencing stuff we've done, we've started to invest a lot in portable panels, which have been tremendous to be able to move different stalls around and just change the facility as the needs arise. And our hope is that the longer that we've kind of moved things around and stuff starts to become permanent, then we'll start to put in more long-term structures that are needed. So, really just getting out and, educating yourself on the types of facilities there are, also knowing what your budget is, what's your end goal? How big do you want this facility to get? Where do you want your program to go? I think the worst thing you could do is if it grows faster than your group around you, your team that you put together, if the facility outgrows that group, then you'll never have success. It'll be really, you'll struggle with getting too big too quick can be a challenge.
Absolutely, it can. I would completely agree with that, because you got to have that staff. What do they say about kind of marketing? You better have a good product before you start marketing it, or it's going to shoot you in the foot.
Yeah, you got to have a good product before you can even ever think about, putting lessons together or programs or, a lot of that has to do with, I think when we think about putting together a horse program, we just think about the facilities and maybe the human, the staff members that we're going to put there. Building your herd is something that is, it takes time. It's not every horse you bring in isn't going to be a good fit, and that some of them are going to have to, you have to move them on or, so if you're trying to get in, especially what we do, where we do a lot of larger group trail rides, having 20, 25 horses that are solid horses to put people on and know those horses, personalities and the different characteristics that animal can have and how they might react to different human interactions with people that are, stereotype or typical things that we're doing. It's really important to get to know that herd base and know, or at least have some inclination of what they might do during your program, because all you can do 100 good things and all it takes is one bad experience and that thing can just spread like wildfire and it could really, hurt your programming.
James, that's such a good idea, you know, and what people don't realize is sometimes your lesson horses, your trail string, whatever the case may be, cost more than your staff if they're just sitting around just eating and not doing anything.
Well, and, you know, I think what we found, too, from what we've seen is if you decide to do it as a business, you have to think of it as a business. And what happens is you get that, you just referenced the horse that you bring in, and it's just not working out for whatever reason. Doesn't fit the program, a little too high or whatever. And then they keep it. And then you end up keeping the next one and the next one and the next one. And if you're in business, you end up with 25 horses around eating all your profits. And it's tough. Yeah, it's tough to move that horse along to a different home, but it's what you've got to do. I mean, if you want to stay in business for the long term.
That is so true. It's just like our employees. They show up to work every day, and where I'm at, we feed them meals and give them a bed to sleep in. And if they just showed up for the meals and for the sleeping times and they didn't show up for the actual work, they probably wouldn't be working for me too long. So,
although if that job is still open, I'll take it and I'll be out.
You'll be, we're full up for 2016, 2017, but I can put you on the list for next year.
Okay.
So James, let's go into the nitty gritty here just for a second and talk about something that people kind of shy away from, but I think it's confusing, yet I also think it's something we need to chat about. What are some basic insurance needs that you need when you're setting up a horse business? It's not necessarily the same as setting up some as other businesses. So what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, my thoughts are, I mean, make sure that the insurance company that you're working with, they've worked with horse programs. One of the worst things you could do is, you know, just negating the fact of having insurance and hoping that something never happens, you know. But really making sure that your insurance company is fully aware of what you do with your horses, because there's such a, you know, all the way from a lead ride all the way, you know, to actively letting them, doing lessons and open training where the, you know, participants are out there on their own. Making sure that you're fully covered for all those types of activities that you might be doing. And also knowing your tack, there's certain types of, when you're putting people on horses, knowing that, you know, if you, some people in the industry, it's appropriate to ride a horse. Maybe you're in a halter at different times, but if you're running a program and, you're putting people on horses, you know, you need to make sure that you've got them in equipment that's, nationally known to be, programming equipment, not some of the training aids and things like that that we typically can use for in our horsemanship walk is for different times. But making sure that you're taking all that stuff into account, and and if you're the one putting someone on a horse, know that you are the one responsible for that person's experience. And if something happens to them, you're going to be the first one under the microscope.
I love that you brought that up about putting on tack that's nationally recognized, because unfortunately, right, if you end up with, heaven forbid, something going down the road, we end up in a court of law, what are they going to pull out? They're going to pull out the tack catalogs. And if the tack catalog's right under halter, say for leading and tying only, then guess what? They're going to say, why are you riding in it? So, riding it personally all day long, but when you're putting clients up, yep, it needs to have at least a bitless bridle or a hackamore or a bozelle or a snaffle bit or whatever the case may be. But yeah, that, I love that you brought that up.
Yeah. Well, with the natural horsemanship, which I love a lot of the practices that people are doing down that line, it can get real easy to, some of us that have more experience that you can do a lot with some of these training aids, but, taking them out and putting them in a program setting, that's not a good situation. And also with your horses, if you have a horse that's, it wouldn't pass a lameness exam, if something was to happen on that horse and maybe it had nothing to do with maybe an old injury or something but it's not completely sound, people are going to ask, why did you have this participant on a horse that can't pass a soundness exam? So, those are all things to take into account that I think sometimes we forget about, when we're trying to, get the program going and get it done in a time frame.
think you're absolutely right on all of that. So I've got, let's go ahead and move from the horses to the staff. So many different ways to hire staff. You can 1099 them and give them a contract, or you can hire them as actual staff and pay their payroll tax. What are all your thoughts on all that?
With being at a summer camp, we do bring on, 30 people. So I've worked with both of these types of situations. With the regulations of hiring individuals, and especially if you're doing more than just part-time, what you have to offer those folks to be full-time for you, you want to make sure that you start to take that into account as you are, putting together your program. 1099 contract staff, great. I think that's a good way to go. The one thing I think you have to remember, though, is that you can't completely control their day like you can if you hire somebody, because they are contracted. You have to give them a list of things that need to be done, and then it's not as easy just to, put them on a date and hourly time frame. So I think both of them, it really depends on the situation you're in. When you're getting started, I think contract staff could be a great direction, because there's no long-term commitments. One of the best things I ever heard told to me is, when things are going great and you've got lots of programming going on, the easiest thing to do is hire more staff to get the job taken care of. However, when things aren't going so well, the hardest thing to do is fire them, or, reduce your staff. So I would say be slow to, to grow your staff too quick in the times that, things might slow down and you don't need as many staff as you have.
I would agree with that. So now, some of the folks that are listening today are going to probably want to go down the road maybe of self-employment and not necessarily work for an entity. You obviously, mm-hmm. with your MBA and other things that you've experienced in your background, what are your thought processes on setting up a business entity? Do they go sole proprietor route? Do they go LLC? What is that? All of those different things. What are your thoughts?
I think when you're working in an industry like we do with horses and, trying to do the best that we can, but never being able to completely control a situation. Being a sole proprietor or a partnership, there's a lot of risk involved. You're putting your whole livelihood, your family, everything's out there for if something was to go wrong. Those things are in play. Looking at, if you do an LLC, it's setting up an LLC is something that's so easy to do. You can get online and do it quickly. You don't even have to, meet with an attorney, although I would strongly encourage people to reach out to get legal advice when they're doing these things. But in my opinion, working under an LLC, or if you're not employed by an organization that is kind of a parent company that takes on some of the liability from you, I think working as a sole proprietorship or in a partnership in this industry you could find yourself in a challenging situation at some point in time.
Yes. And I would advise people, like, we have a really small little lesson business that I run, because of course I mainly run certified horsemanship. But in our little lesson business, we made it an S corp. And the reason why we did that is just for liability mm-hmm. purposes. And we have John and Christy Landwehr, that's my husband and I, own the horses mm-hmm. and we lease them to right. CJL training, because heaven forbid, if something happens, we don't want our horses to go away and to be owned by somebody right. else. So I think that right. kind of protection. So yeah, I think that that's just a great piece of advice.
Well, and I think you hit on a super important piece there when you talked about leasing and stuff, making sure that it's not just verbal contracts, that you actually have stuff in writing. Because if something does happen, you want to make sure you have something you can go back to and say, yes, this contract wasn't just a verbal, this was written down whenever. And you have that piece to go back on if you find yourself in a courtroom.
Absolutely. That's, I think, a very, very important point. So what are some other, just kind of overall with your background, not only with your degrees, but also with just kind of your experience, that you want to go ahead and mention to people? Is there a specific example maybe of something that's come up business or marketing wise that you want to mention? What would you like to share?
Business or marketing wise? I'm really trying to think of a particular example. I think one thing that came up to me when I was actually in a Sunday school the other day, and this thought reoccurred to me, it's something I stress with all of our staff, especially when we're talking about starting up a new business or going into a new field, one of the biggest things, you know, don't quit 5 minutes before the miracle. And I think it's so many times we can be starting these new things and it feels like, you know, things start out, they're exciting, and then some of the new wears off and we start to slow down, and then you start to second guess whether you're in the right place, whether you're doing the right thing. And it takes a lot of work to get a great thing put together. So sometimes it happens quickly, sometimes it happens slowly. We don't know when that miracle's coming, but if you stay at it and work hard, I think you'll always you'll see a miracle for yourself and what the business that you're putting together, and hopefully the participants that you're serving.
James, I love that. Don't quit 5 minutes before the miracle. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's something that stuck with me. I heard it at a conference once, and I was just kind of started to play, you know, put it in play a lot in my life in different places and share it with our staff as much as I can.
It's always like when before GPS, you had directions to somebody's house, and you always turned around because you thought you were lost about two blocks before the house.
Right, and you were almost there.
You were almost there because it always seemed like you were going too far. You passed it, and you were just never quite there. It's the same thing. Now, so with the camp, that's a little bit different to market. Is it all word of mouth, or do you have one social media place that is working better, you know, avenue that is working better than others?
We do a lot of Facebook is one of our major forms
sponsored
of communication.
Posts?
We do some sponsor posts, not as much. We do a lot more for our fall festival. We have a fall festival, the Corn Maze, and we just started that last year. That's growing, where we do horse-drawn wagon rides, and we're starting to incorporate our equines and we've got some smaller animals and things like that. But then the social media, and I'm not the best at social media. That's one thing I do. I try to recognize where I fall short and put people in place around me that are, you know, good at those things. I'm not the social media guru by any means. I think I'm a little bit outside of my generation where I feel like I need a cell phone, but I don't have to have it for everything. You know, I don't do as much on the social media platform, but I think Facebook's a great, great one to use. We also have a website, www.campchippewa.org. And then, you know, we marketing on like the CHA website. We're doing clinics or, you know, trying to utilize a lot of the local chambers and things like that, that'll send out emails and, get the word out. Marketing is one of the hardest things to do. And I think you have to, it's hard to invest in marketing and advertising and to put money up front and not really see it doing a whole lot. But it really does pay off in the long run, and getting the word out is the one of the most challenging things, I think, in these programs.
I would agree. How do we share it, and what's the best way to share it? So, James, we so appreciate having you on today. What is the best place for folks to find you?
The best place for folks to find me would be, again, at the Camp Chippewa website. That's campchippewa.org, CHIPPEWA. They can also find me on my own Facebook page, and that's just James Rickner. So.
Well, we appreciate you being on today. And gosh, I'll see you next week, maybe at our board meeting in Lexington, Kentucky. So there you go.
Yes, I plan on being there. Looking forward to it.
Great. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Have some barbecue for me, okay? Because I'm hungry.
I will. I'll ship some out to you.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks.
Now I really am hungry thinking about Kansas City barbecue. Ugh.
I know, it's so good, isn't it?
It is.
So good.
Well, you probably had a little barbecue while you were in Texas there last week.
We did. We had some barbecue. We had some fish, you know. We had some Mexican, Tex-Mex kind of thing. We had and there's a lot of German influence in San Antonio. So we had some bratwurst. We had a bunch of different stuff. It was a good culinary experience.
You know, there's Jennifer and I've always said we trips go, vacations especially, but even conferences go one of two ways. They're really good food trips, or everything is wrong with the food the entire time. There never seems to be a happy medium when we go on vacation. It's either we have a really good food trip or it's just a terrible food trip.
That's a really good point, actually, now that I think about it.
Yeah, I don't know why that is, but you know, we've had some fantastic food trips, and then we've had some where we just can't seem to get anything right. In the food department. Yeah. But, you know, Texas, I don't think you go wrong.
No, I think everywhere is pretty good, yeah. No matter where you go.
Right.
But you know what I'd like to do really quick is kind of wrap up this talk that we just had, just with something for people to think about. First of all, I'm going to give a little tip, and then I'm going to do kind of my top three things I think you have to have. So my little tip is, if you are having issues with your social media, like you want Facebook and all this stuff, and you're like, I don't have time every day to do this stuff, there's a little gem called Hootsuite, Hoot like the owl, H-O-O-T, suite like a hotel room. And you get on hootsuite.com, and it's free to put in your message, let's say on Sunday afternoon, and say, I want this to post on Monday on these platforms. I want this to post on Tuesday at this time with these platforms. It is unbelievable. So I'm just throwing that out there as my tip. And then my top three things that every single person getting into the horse business who either wants to go work for somebody or own their own, I think you have to have a tax person. So that would be your CPA, who understands the things you can write off. Because I can write off my riding breeches because, quote unquote, I wouldn't go into the Walmart with those on normally.
You don't live in Ocala.
There you go. That is true. But that's something to think about. And then an insurance person who can figure out what kind of insurance you need. And then finally, a lawyer, and definitely an equine lawyer. So that would just be my little 2 cents to wrap us up.
Very good. And, you know, I guarantee you some of our listeners are looking at going in and starting a farm and doing the training and lesson business here over the next year or two, and are looking at doing that. And they go through the same things that all of us have gone through. What you go through when starting that business, you know, you talk about generations, has not changed in 50 years. You're still going to go through the same things. You know, the marketing and the implementation has changed a little bit, but you still have the same issues, don't you? It still comes back to, how do I find customers? How do I keep customers? How do I pay the bills? All of those things stay the same.
Without a doubt. And I'll tell you, we have a bunch of webinars on our site at chainstructors.com that are exactly on this topic. We have a risk management one, we have a building your business one, and we have a marketing one. So for those that didn't get enough today and want to get into the weeds even more, check those out. Just go under chainstructors.com, click on education, click on webinars, scroll down through the topics, and you can find them that way.
And if you're doing it to get rich, forget it. Find a different business.
What do they say? What does it take to make $1 million in the horse business?
You start with 10. Yeah, that's right. That's right. That is so true. Well, Christy, thank you once again for joining us here. Of course, Christy is here every month with us. She is here the third Tuesday of every month. And you can find all of the past episodes of Horses in the Morning at horsesinthemorning.com. Just search for CHA, your Certified Horsemanship. It'll bring up all the past episodes. You can go back and listen to all of them if you want to. And they're also on your website, right?
They are. Again, you just go to the education tab and go under the Horse Radio Network, and there they are.
All right, good. And we don't forget, the easiest and simplest way to listen to all of our shows, 13 of them now, is to go to our app, search Horse Radio Network in iOS or Android, and you'll find all of our different shows. And there we have 3 new ones that have started recently, so you're going to want to check those out too. If you already have our app, then you want to make sure you refresh it, you update it, because there is an update available. And if you're not seeing, for example, the Around the Track show, you don't have the latest version of the app, and you want to hit the update so that you can get all of the shows on the Horse Radio Network. It is still the easiest way. Where are you off to now? What's next?
It is Lexington, Kentucky. I'm going to come in right after you leave. I fly in on Monday.
Oh, so I'm leaving on Sunday. I know.
I know. It's bad timing.
Well, fly in a couple days early and you can join us at Road to the Horse. Just what you need after just getting home.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I know. I probably need at least one weekend with my family, or else my boys will say, really, do I have a mommy? So no, I definitely. Yeah. But you know what? Maybe next year, because I'd love to go to that event.
Yeah. They kind of probably want to see you for a couple days till they want to get rid of you again. Does it usually take about a week? And then they're saying, mommy, when are you leaving again?
You know, no, they actually like me around, and I'm not just saying that.
Okay,
you know what? I've been traveling since before they were born. So they're like, yeah, mom goes, mom comes back. No big deal. whatever.
It's your husband that goes, but you get back here.
I know. I got dishes to clean and horses to feed. And why are you always gone?
Yeah, exactly. I know that feeling. All right. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you again tomorrow. Jamie will be here with one of our auditors is co-hosting for me tomorrow. Jill will be sitting in. So a little bit of fun. The ladies will all be holding down the fort tomorrow on Horses in the Morning. See you, everybody.